heading to Rarotonga, then you need to get the unofficial official guide to Raro, and it's completely free. The helpful 8-page PDF gets you completely ready for your holiday to Rarotonga. Inside the guide, you'll find information on transportation, Wi-Fi, customs, SIM, eSIM information on the cards, scooter rentals, and so much more. To get your free guide to Rarotonga, head to raropass.com/guide. That's raropass, raropass.com/guide. Welcome to the Key Runner Podcast, a show about what you will find, what you will not find in the Cook Islands. And now here's your host, Chantal Napa.
Podcast. This is Chantal Napa, your host. I've got Tony Bell inside that little bunker house of mine. Welcome, Tony.
Yeah, kia ora Chantal. It's lovely to be here in the little bunker. Hopefully, we have survived if anything happens out of the water.
You know this bunker
right next to the water,
right, Tony? You know this bunker of mine, which is Chantal's concierge. This is an old building that they put in when Rarotonga had all of the around Rarotonga. They had inside here the generators power.
Yeah, I never knew that.
So if you actually look around Raro, you will see, I don't know how many, but there are so many of these little concrete buildings that the government put in, and then the power was run out of the generators for everybody before the lines came in.
Man. So it's gone from generating power to having a different kind of power generated.
Isn't that so structurally sound, man? Yeah. And then when we even went to drill these shelves in here, Tony, it was
amazing.
You know, because the engineering and that, and then the floor, we couldn't, because of the years and years and years of the oil or the whatever, it just wouldn't take paint.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
but then we just put the lean-to at the front and the lean-to at the back, and my auntie and uncle, who it's on their property, Auntie Shane and Uncle Toi, it's just I love it. It had no power in it had no water in it.
Yeah, I remember those first days when we sort of, you're getting started and we're coming down here and just so you were so excited for this place, and I was like, I'm excited for you, but when I look around what about this brick building? I mean, it's in a great location, though, right? Mm. So it's right across from Fruits of Raro, and got some good traffic, foot traffic, car traffic going past. So,
and that's why I asked my auntie for it, because I was looking for a location for Chantal's concierge in 2000. And well, my daughter Athena, who's now 14 this year, Tony, she was in a cot.
Oh, wow.
In the corner. Wow. In the corner there, right? And then my auntie, my uncle, and my auntie helped me put in the power, and we had to dig a trench, right? Yeah. You know, my landlord helped me put it in. You don't realize how big it is to put power into something until you have to dig that 43-meter trench.
Man. Yeah, absolutely.
And lay the phones and lay the power and do it in stages and turn a light on and go, yeah.
It was definitely worth it.
And when you say back in those days, Tony, that's because, you know, before we started up today, everyone, Tony says to me, okay, Chantal, so what's our agenda? What's our, you know, what's the purpose of our recording today? And I said, this is our purpose, right? Our purpose is to let everybody know that you and I have known each other since about 2015, I think. Mm-hmm. Yep. When did you first move here, Tony?
Well, Simone and I moved here in 2005. So, I mean, I've known of you and been around, but working together, I think, was that first year you're getting this off the ground and getting the charter off the ground and sort of putting a bit of effort into what was then. It's probably it was a new stage. I remember you came to me and said, Tony, this is my idea. It's a concierge. Do you know what a concierge is? I was like, yeah, I do want to do, but let me tell you. But, and just sort of going through those initial stages in seeing your passion for what you're doing, or this next phase. So, yeah, so we've probably worked together solidly since I was at the Orange Place, 2015.
Yeah.
But, and we've been here since 2005.
You've been here, yeah, since 2005. Yeah. And I remember sitting with you in 2015 and I was designing with you Brendan Nicholas's 2 meter board for Dawn Breaker Game Fishing. And then we worked on my board, my 2 meter, because you're a graphic designer, right? And then I remember sitting with you and going, please place that there, please place that there, please use that font, please use black and white, go away, come back.
Icons. I need icons.
Yeah.
Remember that? The icons on the little blackboard.
Yeah, like, right there behind you.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. You know, and so these two billboards we designed together, you and I.
That's right.
And they have one of the reasons I took so long with you. Remember, I would come and go and come and go.
Yeah, we had our kids. We were a little tiny little kids. You know, we'd have our Mama Mita was our nanny at the time, so she was. That was kind of good because we could leave the kids. Even your girls would hang out in the house.
Because it was 8 years ago, you and then I came to you for graphic design work. And so that would have made, you know, Desiree 3.5.
Yeah, she was small.
Would have made Athena 6. And then your kids were small too.
Yeah, about the same age.
And we were working with them running around us.
Yeah, I remember. I had a little garage, little outhouse garage where we were doing the work in it. And, yeah, I mean, I look back fondly on those days. As you know, time flies, eh? Now our kids are taller, wiser.
At high school.
So it's, yeah, I think that's, you know, you appreciate the journey, I guess, if you're able to reflect back on.
Yeah, and that you're able to do stuff with young children.
Yeah, it's a big,
And having them around you while you're working or trying to work.
Yeah, absolutely, And I think it's been, for my children, I think it's been, well, we'll see how it pans out when they're older, when you know, they like tell me what they really felt. But it was nice for me to be able to have them around, but also for them to understand, hey, sometimes dad needs to work and sort of build that into our family culture. I mean, I've worked at home and in corporate for on and off for the last, since we've had kids. My wife's full time in corporate, very, very busy job in Rarotonga. So growing up, having our kids sort of grow up in and around that, but also making the most, you know, always having an open door for them to come in. Because, you know, kids, there's no, like,
filter. Sometimes there's no filter,
sometimes no boundary. And sometimes it's important. So in that little outhouse, I used to go, hey, kids, Mum Mita's here. You guys stay out. You know, I've got a meeting or I've got something on. So I'd close the door and I locked the door and closed the curtains. And I told my eldest daughter, Maiva, I said, look, if there's anything you need, just call me on the home phone, from the home phone to my mobile. You get the phone call about 10 minutes in, and it's like, Dad, what's wrong? Oh, where's the remote? I've got half an hour.
And you're just in the garage, eh?
I'm just in the garage, and it's just like, you know, I told you that's something urgent, but I guess the remote's urgent, so I had to stop what you're doing. But, you know, now our kids are older. In some ways, I do wish that we'd sort of.
You wouldn't have wanted any other way.
Well, I think you look back and you think, we did the best we could at the time.
Totally.
But then at the same time, I think as your kids grow up, and as my children now, so my oldest girl, she's actually in high school in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. She's boarding there this year. And, you realize, cherish the moments we have because all of a sudden they're going to be. When they're young, even like 5 years ago, photos on my phone of just maybe 3 years ago. They've all got chubby little round faces and we watch videos of them and their voices are all squeaky and, you know, good memories.
Totally.
But I just say for any family, young families, they cherish those moments when they're young. People told us when we had the 4 young ones, make the most of us, you know, it goes so fast. And, I mean, our kids are only, 14 and 10 years old or 9 years old. So they're still young and big part of our lives. But, make the most of that time you have with them. And
I agree.
Although someone and I are still young enough, every now and again, every couple of months, we're like, you know, could we have another one? You probably could, eh? So it's fluctuates, you know. I don't know. I've been asking your friends, and when do you know? And see, look, I think everyone's different. And I think we're still in the hunt in terms of like, you know, I guess when your body's like, nah, this, you know, no more, then okay, cool. That decision's been taken away from us now. But, you know, until then, and we're at church, and every time someone has a baby, it's just like, that drive home from church after we, you know, someone's holding a baby or something, it's like, you know what, we could have another one. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, because you've got older, our kids are, you know, that you've got free babysitting there, man. You know, when you get that big age range, you're raised by your big sister. It's just like an island wave. It's an island wave.
Hey, you mentioned that is beautiful, the island wave. You mentioned that you came here in 2005, yeah. Tony. That's like 18 years ago if we're doing some 18
maths. 18 years this year, yeah.
And what made your family move here from where?
From Auckland. So my wife and I were born and raised in Auckland. And we met at high school at Otahuhu College, Glasgow. And yes. I moved there from an all-boys high school called De La Salle College, which is just down the road. And sort of the girls were ugly there, so I went and moved to Otahuhu College, next level. So we, someone I met there in the fifth form. We started dating at the end of the sixth form. And then we got married. I think we were in 2004, we got married, which was great. And we, you know, the first year we traveled together for our honeymoon, went to Europe and came back. And Simone had just started working for KPMG, the company she was with the year before. KPMG had a job offer going here for, you know, secondment to Rarotonga. And I believe it was a 2-year secondment. So we took a roll the dice. You know, I'd been in some work to sort of leading up to our wedding, and I was still in the same job after our wedding. And we sort of thought, hey, man, it's an exciting time. We'll only go for a year. We've never been to Rarotonga before and hear good things. And we sort of, you know, we sort of talked to all the right people. We talked to our parents and had a chat to our church leadership, sort of spiritual guidance, you know. So, yeah, we felt, hey, man, we'll come here for a year, extend our honeymoon. And then, February 12th, 2005, we landed. And it was just after the first of the, we had five cyclones. You remember that year we had five cyclones in a row. So we came after the first cyclone. I can't remember the name of it. Cyclone, maybe Cyclone Mena or Nancy, one of those. And the island was upside down. And then, you know, there was damage everywhere. They'd done a big cleanup. And for the next 4 weeks, we had four more cyclones. So it was a big. So that was our first experience of Rarotonga and sort of driving into town to pick up. We lived in Titicavica, just down the road here. And then I remember driving into town to pick up Simone, and we got to town and the seeds were right up coming across the road to the courthouse. And we were just like, man, what have we done? And we did all of our gear had, we come with our luggage and I put all of our gear, like stuff, home stuff, extra stuff, my computer and things like that. There was all in shipping. So, and then, so we were sort of like, we came over with a year in mind, and that was 18 years ago. So it's, we got here. I think what really helped us was Simone came over with two others, or maybe two or three others in her office. So there was a good connection with people there. And then we started going to church in Ngatangere at the AOG church back then. Mm. And I think, you know, when you go to a new country, if the quicker you find a community, the easier it is to adjust to a new life. So, yeah, and then for the first year or two, we sort of just enjoyed our life here in Rarotonga. And we had no kids then, and we'd travel heaps to New Zealand, and we traveled back to Europe for secondment with KPMG. And so we lived a great life. And but I think after the second year here, you back in those days, Bebo was the big connecting point for a lot of people, and Facebook was just starting.
What's Bebo?
Bebo. You know what? You skipped Bebo. Bebo was like the big social media platform down this side of the world, after MySpace, which was another social media platform. And and then obviously, I don't know if you've seen like groups and like Hotmail and all that kind of stuff was how you stayed connected. And we saw people starting to have children, big OEs, not like we're in Rarotonga, sort of. I felt strongly that, you know, well, let's look at what's next for us. While we were at the church at the Ngatangere AOG, we got involved with helping out the youth group and then leading the youth group. And we really felt like, okay, we're here, end of 2 years, we should go back and start making a life back in New Zealand. But we enjoyed the life here, and we felt strongly that this is what God had for us at this time in our life. So we stayed. So Simone signed another contract to hang around, and we built a little life here. And I think when Simone got pregnant with Maiva in 2007, I think that was a big like, okay, we actually have to make a decision for us. We either go back home to Mangere Papatoetoe, all our connections are there, or we go. We are thinking about going to Europe. There's opportunity because we didn't have children. You know, we could go back up there, or we could live here in Rarotonga. And I'm so grateful that was the right decision to raise our children here. Because when it comes to raising kids, if you got an option between Auckland city life, which we knew, traveling with a little baby to someone's next secondment, or living here in Rarotonga, it was a no-brainer for us. So yeah, that's so we've ended up. We stayed here for 18 years this year. So we. yeah, we've seen like all the kids that were here when we first came from the youth group, or the families that we knew. All those kids are like in their 30s now, and they're you know, they've got beards and children, and you know, so it's really, and our children are older, they've grown up here, they know the island life is what they know. When we travel to New Zealand, they definitely look fish out of water. We have to say, hey man, put your shoes on, and you know, don't walk there. Hey, where did you leave my phone? I'm like, it's over there on the far side of the food court. It's like, you know, you can't. So there's an innocence that our children retain for a season, you know, and we've just loved being here. We've found, you know, we've connected with church family and
yes,
lifelong friends here. So I think that's how we ended up here, and that's why we're still here. And we just got our permanent residence last year.
Congratulations!
So I think we're next level. I mean, when I came here, a lot of, because I'm a Polynesian, I'm Island, and my dad's from Tonga, and my mum was from Niue. You know, you sort of blend in with the crowd. And when I came in here, I cut all the sleeves off my t-shirts because it was like too hot. Eh? Like, man, it's too hot for these t-shirts. And go to town, and the mamas and the babas, hey, there's a man who speaks. I've been learning a little bit of this language. So I wouldn't speak fluent, but you know, you can generally get the idea of what people are asking. I guess from that perspective, yeah, we've loved being here and being, because what I found is Cook Islands people, they embrace, you know, if you come here and you have a heart to be a part of the community, and we're part of so many different community groups, and that we, I've always just felt that Cook Islanders and certain families within our network of families and friends here have really just embraced Simone and I as locals. And for years, they were, ah, no, you're just a local, you're all right. I said, no, I'm actually from Auckland and Tongans. No, you're a local, you're all right. But I've really enjoyed. We've really enjoyed our life here, and obviously with permanent residency.
Congratulations! Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is next level, isn't it? Yeah, and a big decision, hey.
To be honest, even if we didn't get it, it's not like we were leaving. So this is our. We've made this place home, and it just opens opportunities if we want to take them to leasing
and build a home.
Yeah, business opportunities. We've only had it for a year, and now, my wife, now she's moving into contract work now. So we
For listeners who are not from here, Tony, let's explain to them, because I think they're going to find that quite interesting. What does that mean when you get permanent residency in the Cook Islands? What does it mean to you?
What it means to me is, like, you know, it just affirms what I already know, that this is my place. This is where we're supposed to be in this time in our lives. This is where we feel God has blessed us to be here, you know, be amongst this community.
Yeah.
What it means for us from the practical sense is we don't have to, every year, Simone and I have to apply for a permit to be here, a work permit, because we have a little company that was set up with some friends, majority owned Cook Islands company, but I always had to get a work permit through that company.
Mm.
It also means we have access to leasing land. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a Cook Island, obviously if your blood doesn't run through a particular piece of land, you need to lease land, but only if you're a Cook Islander or permanent resident.
Mm-hmm.
So that opened us. Now we're thinking and talking about buying homes and building, you know, that, what do you do? And we'll go to the local, you know, land holdings, Bill Doherty, but there's a special book there which got all the plans and stuff. So we'll probably have a look through that at some point in the near future. And so it's from a practical perspective, it does mean we can put more roots down here, but honestly, it didn't mean much in the sense of this is our home. But so I was quite emotional on the day, because I think you realize, you reflect back on all the people that you met. And when we first moved here, the reason we connected with Ngatangi AOG, we went for one service, and the pastor Mitchell Tini Tangaroa, he's passed away now, and his wife Auntie Ura, they called us in the middle of the day. She's like, oh, have you got any food? You got blankets? Because it's just these cyclones, they're happening all over. And you think of, like, Auntie Helen Tatuaba, you know, Auntie Helen, and her family, Uncle Huge, and you know, they would invite. We were in Atu one year. We ended up going to one of their family weddings, and you know, the Uncle Paul and Auntie Kura Tuapu after church on Sundays go for some chop tomato and the tomato sauce chicken. You know, there's these are little in our first 3 or 4 years here. Like, man, I reflected quite a lot on that just before we got out at the PR ceremony, because it's. That's what makes a place home. And then obviously through that, we, you know, as our kids started going to school, and we're at Celebration Church now.
Yes.
And, you know, I just think all those connections, and I have to give thanks to God for his for, you know, not just being in a place and being in a little community that's isolated from the, you know, from the local community, but being able to be embraced, but also, you know, contribute to the community that we live in. So, I think it's, so getting permanent residency, you know, the certificate's really nice, you know, having an agent. And now at the past, now I don't feel so bad. There's a residence line at the airport, you know. So we always burn that one because we live here. But now it's like, yeah, I don't just live here. We got the papers, man. And my passport's got the stamp and we all good. So it was, like I said, it was a no-brainer for us to just put our application in. And at that stage, we didn't have to sort of scratch. I know there was friends of ours who had to really scratch around because there's certain requirements in terms of volunteering and certain amount of hours you have to done in the community. But because we'd had so many connections and it sort of really just opened ourselves to be used by God for whatever and the different things which we'll talk about, I guess, you know, that we get a part of. All those things, like, it just, you know, I'm just grateful that we're here and that we're here legally. I mean, we're here for how many? I tell people, you know, we got here 2005 and we haven't had a permanent residency till last year, 17 years. And I say, you know, that's probably part of my Tongan heritage. We're very good at overstaying. It's in New Zealand, so I probably that's how I've been able to, like, you know, sort of hang around here. But definitely KPMG, which is where my wife was working. She's finished there now. You know,
she did a long stint there, didn't she?
20 years with KPMG, 17 years with the Cook Islands office. Yeah, so
20 years with KPMG from a young, married. Yeah. You know, just married. 17 years with the Cook Island office.
Yep. Yeah. We had a farewell for someone KPMG put on earlier this week. So yeah, I was very proud of my wife, you know, and there's a lot of business people and it's a lot of people who I respect in our community, business community who she's worked with who came along and they said some nice words about what she's meant to them through KPMG and also excited for the next step for her and for our family going out. You know, going out on your own, as you know, it's not like something you consider lightly, especially when you're working for a great company. Yeah, but it makes sense for our family now. We feel like, you know, God is in it for us. God is for us. What should I say? It's probably a better way to phrase that. And you just keep going until something else comes up, or until opportunities close, doors open. I've always believed if a door closes, that's a good sign. Because it means something's, you know, God's got something on. There's something on the horizon. There's something or an opportunity.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think that's a very important part.
Tony, you know, I think you're right. Because sometimes, as you get older too, you're like, okay, well, there's a reason why God closed that door. I don't know why, but He's gonna show me why.
Yeah.
He's gonna show me why, and then that other door opens, and you go, see?
Yeah.
That's why. Yeah.
And I think you look, you know, at our advanced age, you know, not even old, but you can't see us, but, you know, we're very spring chicken looking. But, you know, you can even look back in your life and you realize, shucks, you know, the good things that came out of trying circumstances and the journey you're on. And you don't, obviously, when you're in it, you don't see it, man. It's just like, man, I just don't know, man. I don't know why this is happening. But in the grand scheme of your life and, you know, trusting God and His plans and even like what's unfolding in and around our family from the decisions we've made. Like, it's just, who would have thought coming here for a year to Rarotonga? I mean, it's not even my home island and my wife's New Zealand Māori. So it's like, we were strangers in this land when we came to think we've raised our family here. We've spent our lifetime here essentially. And we've built, you know, business and had jobs and stuff that provision, you know.
Tony, and I mean, like, if you talk about what you've built, like, you know, I mean, Fe'au, right? You know, Fe'au, that if you go on the internet, everybody, and Google, and you know, Google Tony Fe'au, F-E-A-O, you know, Fe'au, there is an apostrophe in there somewhere, an acronym. It's F-E, then the
apostrophe,
then A-O. He's all over the internet, right? Border governors. That's good stuff, man.
I hope so, man. Yeah.
Border governors for a primary school that our children,
that's right,
you know, have attended at Api Te Okio. You know, you're on with embracing the amazing for autism, all your digital design work, you know, like working at Cook Islands Tourism. You know, so let's, that's, you haven't been stagnant is what I've been saying. And you're like sought after as an MC.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy that.
A lot, you know, as an MC at events. And, you know, you do a lot of MC events and, you know, everyone's like, oh, cool, Tony's got this. Yeah, Tony's got this, right? And, yeah, I mean, you've kind of grown up here, if that makes sense. You know, because when, how old were you when you got married?
So we got married, I think I was 24.
Yeah, and so you've been here. Almost 18 years.
Yeah, most of our sort of adults are going into middle age life now.
Right. And so let's talk about Board of Governors for Api Tiokio.
Yep.
That's a big role. And you didn't just do it, you know, for a year. How long were you?
So, I was the chair of the board for 4 years, and but I've been on the board for 5 years. So this, and I just came off the board. This is my first year. Off the board.
It's huge, you know, because, I mean, the Board of Governors for Api Tiokio, which is the school that my children have been in since preschool, and your children too.
Yeah, that's right.
And which is kind of like, even though we don't, you know, we see a lot of each other at preschool, right?
Mm.
And, I mean, so there's, I'm looking at, you know, a welcome from our chairman.
Yeah,
our Board of Governors.
They need to update that. But yeah, they're still there. I see that.
Api Tiokio is a school that is focused on nurturing children, passionate learners, effective communicators, independent thinkers who become responsible Cook Islanders. We value our Cook Islands culture and are proud to offer a caring family environment focused on the child. So, you know, President, Api Tiokio, Board of Governors, tell me about that, please.
Yeah, so, well, when I started out just as a regular board member, we came on board. It was, you know, I'd never done been on a board of a current PTA or board before. So one of the board chair at the time asked me if I was interested in being on the board. I've quietly chanted out. I think they were actually after my wife, but she was too busy. So they come and knock it to the husband. You know, we had 2-for-1. So their first year was a real eye opener for me around the what governance is, or the impact having a good board of governors that communicates with the principal can have positive and negative on the direction of a school. So the next year, the board chair at the time, she stepped out, and there was a vacant sort of position there. So I put my hand up got voted in at the AGM, and I sort of did it as part of it was more. You know, there was no one really putting their hand up. They had another guy sort of who was lined up. But I thought, look, I'll put my name in the hat.
And you had 4 children then.
And I got 4 kids there. So we had some long-term skin in the game just for the direction of the school. So I ended up, got the chairmanship. And the first year was probably the most challenging year for the team as a board governance, because I had a strong belief that the board is there for governance, which is the overarching direction of the school policy, those kinds of, the direction of the school, hiring, sort of the future plan of the school, the direction of the school, the strategy. I've always felt the board at a governance level, that's what I had seen with different roles I've had on the Cook Islands. If there's a clear separation between that and the operations of the school, which is why we have teachers who, things that happen in the classroom, things that happen during between 8 till 2 on the school grounds. We hired a principal to manage that for us. So my first job, I felt, was to create order on the board, which is like our principal at the time, Mark, was like, okay, we're going to give you as much rope as you need to run the school within our parameters as a board. Anything else out of that, as long as you're within our policies, and then go for gold. But the rope's either going to fly, or we're going to have to yank it back because you go in the wrong direction. So we that works if you've got a good principal. We don't, the board doesn't have to get too much involved in operations. So we had a great principal.
We did, Mr. Harris,
who's in Gisborne now.
I interviewed Mr. Harris.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, for Kia Ora podcast. He allowed me to interview him in 2020 or 2021, everyone listening. So I learned so much about Mr. Harris that day too.
So we had he was a great principal.
4 years he was our principal, and 5 years he was here. Eh? That's from my memory, I think.
Four years
he was our principal. Yeah.
So we that's how, so for the time I was on the board, and creating the two things that I sort of wanted to do was create order to make sure the board was looking after the board things, and that our principal was looking after the operations of the school. And look what happens in the classroom, that's why we hire these people who've gone for university, these professionals to do all that. There's no reason why the board should be involved in how that is. What sometimes there'd be something that is brought to the board because the principal was like, hey, this is a new, like some things around health, sexual health and that kind of stuff for primary school students. He, you know, as a board, we need to know that what's going to be taught in the classroom is appropriate. So those kinds of things, let's bring it to the board. But in terms of like how to teach maths or, you know, those kinds of strategic in the classroom stuff.
Yeah.
And then previous boards had been more involved in the operations because of the situation with we'd had three principals in 3 years.
I know, Tony. I was just so pleased we had Mr. Harris for a long time.
Good period, And you would have seen the growth that happened in the school.
The children feel, because they were also like, oh, another principal. Like, why is no one staying at our school?
Teachers, right? We had teachers, we had a high turnover of teachers as well at that time. But, you know, there's a mixture of reasons for that. Obviously, Te Upio is, we have most of our teachers hired from New Zealand. And, you know, I sort of challenged that when I came and I said, why aren't we getting local teachers? Because we're definitely putting the ads in the right places here. And we definitely, if there was a teacher, my understanding is that there were teachers being spoken to who we felt would be a good fit in the school. So, but for some reason, the people who responded and were interested in coming, a lot of them were from New Zealand. So and we have a certain standard of education that we've, as a board, we've put in for like that each teacher would have a degree, a full degree, as well as the teaching qualifications. And that's something that we've sort of, it's the ministry requires that, but they also here, if you've got a teaching diploma, then you can also teach in the classroom. We've always led with, if you've got a degree, that puts you ahead of a diploma. If you're Cook Islander, man, that's a bonus because we, you know. But just as it happened, without everything washed out, we had New Zealand standard teachers, which, again, for our school, the type of parent we have at our school, it's a fee-paying school, so it's people have
expectations. Our schools run like a business. There's school fees. I think it's the only school here run like that kind of.
Yeah,
with the school fees that we have.
Well, that's school fees that are that high. Yeah, that's right.
With school fees that amount, like, but yeah, it has a huge role.
Yep.
School role, you know, like that school has doubled in size, I think, since I and you been in preschool with our kids.
Yeah, it definitely has. Yeah, we were up to last year we had about almost 280 something students.
Shucks.
This year we're down to beginning of the year we started with like maybe 260, something like that. Yeah. So 250.
It has doubled since I've been there.
Yeah, we added three classrooms. We've had a waiting list that's got up to over 188 times. So we added the three classrooms at the end of last year at the last board meeting for the year. You know, the question goes, how many on our waiting list? Because we, you know, and the principal said, 170 something, 150 something. It's like, man, we thought we were in the clear for at least a couple of years. But what the school offers and the culture we've built within the school is one of child-centered learning. And, you know, each child that comes to our school isn't just a number, but each one of them is taught, you know, and grows from where they're at. So we've got kids, we had an influx of about 60 kids from other schools last year.
Yeah, we did.
And what it did to our numbers, in terms of the literacy and numeracy numbers, we saw a dip in the overall above and pass and above rate within the school. And we, you know, we attribute that to children who come into the school who haven't been a part of the Te Upio system, and the families want their children to do better, or they like what we're doing, bring them into the school. And there's always a period of bringing them up to scratch with the standards that we expect from our children. So we did see, you know, the overall numbers was that we It was a challenge for the school. We thought, oh man, that's the numbers don't look as good as the year before. But when you factor in, and when we dig deeper into the data, it was that we had children who were coming in from other institutions on the island that may not be as up to their year level for in terms of literacy and numeracy. And that's an exciting challenge for me. It's like, well, first of all, we took off. We've always said we want more local students. We had almost 80%, 75%, 80%, local children, you know. So it's when I first came on to the board, it was at like 50-something, 60%. And so that's a 20% increase in the last four years.
And local kids attending the school, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, what I'm seeing is that the demographic of parent as well. Like we used to have, you know, when you go to school, you can say, okay, we can tell that, most of us who have our children are either business owners or they've got high-powered government jobs or they're, you know, C-suite or management level at their roles in private companies. So what I saw in my last 2 years, was that there's more of our local families, you know, they're not necessarily fitting the same sort of, scenarios that we all like, and we make sacrifices from that too. So I feel like the demographics change, but I think a lot of it's around the value that our families are seeing in what we offer as a school. And a lot of those things don't happen unless you build a strong culture of learning and a strong people-centered culture. So we left, our principal had, that was what he wanted to do, build a strong people culture. We couldn't compete with the salaries from New Zealand when they're coming here. They're getting, selling them close to six figures coming here. And the Ministry of Education base rate was like $32,000 a year for entry-level teachers.
That's good to know. I didn't know.
Yeah, like, so then we do our best
to top it up with the school fees.
School fees, bonuses. We were doing a retention bonus because we had a lot of teachers leaving.
Yeah.
Just in this last year, we changed all of that. So instead of having a bonus, we pay them more while they're with us. So we're basically giving everyone a pay rise. We found that our school, the Ministry of Education for expat teachers coming over, offered. I think we might have been about $15,000 more in terms of the package than what we were offering our teachers. So we had to restructure, to the best of our ability to be able to try and match that. So there's, you know, a lot of people think our school is got money coming out of our ears, you know. But when you're in the engine room, you realize when I first started, I realized, shucks, it's the way we run our school, the quality to get the teachers we need to get. Means there's a very little wiggle room, and we have to be very, very strategic about how we spend the school fees portion of it. So all of our salaries are we partner with the Ministry of Education, so they pay for the teachers' salaries. Anything on top of the salaries, we get very little support. So we maintain our own buildings. We maintain, like, the government schools will have that's taken care of through CIIC. We have teacher aides or learning assistants are a big part of because we have a lot of we champion inclusive education, so children with autism or learning difficulties, behavioral difficulties. So in order to manage that, we have teacher aides are partly funded by the government, but each teacher aide costs a school between $5,000, $7,000, or $10,000 a year. So the school pays for that, the fees pay for that in our fundraising. When it all washes out, yeah, there's a perception that Te Ukiho is, we've got a lot of money. Remember, when we first came here, it was the papa school, the school for the white children. Sorry,
to me. I've been here a long time, you know, with my children. Mm. And I got to do a shout out actually to my sister, Tereka and Maika. They helped me, you know, with my daughter, Athena, with her school fees for years.
Wow, that's great.
Years. Like, I don't know, like 6 years. Mm-hmm. It's huge because we had two kids there.
Yeah.
And so I got to do that shout out. Like, they said, we will look after Athena's school fees. You just worry about Desiree's. Yeah. And I have to do that shout out because, like, they were there from preschool from 3 and a half.
Yep.
And I remember when we went in, Tony, I don't know, I think it was like 1,500. Now it's 2.5, you know, per child, something like that.
Yeah.
2.5 a year, right?
2,500. Well, listen to 1,000.
and that's a primary school in Rarotonga. And so I've got to do that shout out to my sister and her husband, Mike Carr. And then,
well, Mike was on the board for like 14 years or something. So he, they really, the value and their children, the children,
because they were
successful. And it was a good platform for the boys and for my other two.
And they just wanted to support. And it was huge because then we only had Desiree that we had to find the two. $2,500 for, but like I always say to people, man, I think I slept on the floor for 2 years, get my kids through there. And bought a bed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I bought a bed.
Yeah. It's always funny, because your kids are like, school fees, right? But then there's so many other costs to send your kids to school. You got your lunch and the uniform. So all that kind of stuff adds up. So we at the school, we acknowledge the sacrifice, and now with the demographic of families that are coming through now, that there's, I would say there's probably a high percentage of their income, or they're getting family support to be able to send their children to Te Ukiu. So it's, and I think it's testament to, the board that we have and the teachers, and when you get teachers from New Zealand, and the way we interview them, we're not just interviewing, they're from New Zealand and they've got a degree. It comes down to what's their, can they fit into the team? Are they able to adjust to the way we do things? So we don't just let them come and do things their own way.
It just came to my mind, right? The questions would be like, okay, so for 2 years, could you survive if we ran out of rice?
Yeah.
Right? Because this is where you're coming. Like, so in this 2-year contract, are you going to throw a tizzy that there's no, potatoes for 6 weeks, or that there's, it's upside down. It's back to front. Sometimes the boat can't come, and it just is what it is. And don't get here and complain like, oh my God, there's no rice, or oh my God, there's no this. Like, you're coming to an island in the middle of the Pacific. Please understand. And just roll with the punches.
Yeah. I think during the COVID.
It
is what it is. I've honestly found people who've come over who've adjusted the best are the ones that can sort of just go, oh, that's how it works here. Okay, well, we'll adjust if you and I think that's, we're recruiting at the school, all those factors are in. I think we always.
You come here for what we do not have, everybody.
We come here
for the no McDonald's, no traffic lights, no skyscrapers, no casinos.
Yeah, nice weather.
And no rice sometimes.
No rice, yeah.
But beautiful weather most of the time.
But what I've found is our over the 4 years of being a part of, being a part of recruiting, seeing how our teachers respond, you don't always get it right, but there's certainly a type of teacher that tends to survive and do well here, and often they're ones that they're able to adjust or be flexible with, they're agile in their thinking when things are a little bit different, or COVID closes down the borders, you can't go home for 3 terms of a year, so you those are the ones. And then we've had it's hit and miss. Some have come and they've been great on paper, and we've interviewed them, it sounds great, and then
it's a
tough job. And most of our teachers that haven't worked out, it's been circumstances that are out of our control.
Something's happening at home.
Yeah, something's happening at home. Got to go. Relationship breakups. Yeah. There's a wide range of things.
Oh, someone's sick.
The mortgage rates in New Zealand last year was a couple of our teachers. We had an extra busy recruitment season for this year's teachers, because we had teachers who were, just the financial pressure of managing the home that they're renting out.
They were earning here.
And what they're earning here. And surviving here is fine.
Yeah.
But when you've got extra, probably unseen, unforeseen circumstances, so for whatever it is, I think we've gotten, we know what we're looking for. Or staff, and a big part of it is actually coming and being able to ingratiate themselves or be a part of our community, because the last thing was people coming in,
and we appreciate them bringing their expertise with them for that couple of years,
coming from New Zealand. I think there's in New Zealand, obviously the New Zealand Māori is a big part of the education system, and so we get the teachers who come, it's not like a culture shock where, speaking reo or teaching reo in classroom or aspects of it, incorporate that into the education, into the classroom teaching practice. To me, it's like, well, it's just like back home in New Zealand. And it's, that means that's good for us as a school, because we've always said we're a Cook Island school, not a school in the Cook Islands. So we embrace culture or every aspect of culture, dance. We embrace, church. We have our school put it. We embrace song. We embrace, cultural practice in the school, where the school is run. And, for various times within our time at the school, been like, I don't know, 2011, I think we first had our first daughter there. There's always like someone, I mean, 1 year someone said, oh, you know, we should be an international school and join the international chain of schools. And I remember talking to a board member at the time and just being very clearly outlined, no, that is not what we're about. That is not the heart of the woman in the team, the parents that set up Te Ukia all those years ago in the 90s. So, yeah, that's an important aspect of the school, that we retain those Cook Islands aspects, you know. And it's, you know, I've talked to parents and parents from New Zealand who have short contracts, and they love that aspect of the school for their children and experience. We're only here for 3 years. We want our children to have, they're in a good school, but they're also dancing at the culture fest we had the other night, learning thing. My daughter's on the learning drums. My son's learning the ukulele. They come home and they're doing their akarawe, you know, their history in the local language. So I think there's a lot of positives in that respect for our school. Anyway, blah, 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 school podcast there. Next.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you.
But I do miss being on the board. I do miss being in the injury room, but it's been good for me to sort of see the new team coming in sort of and functioning and operating. We've got a great team to take over. Although I do, you know, every Wednesday, or once a month on the Wednesday, that we, you know, we have board meetings. And, you know, I'm finding things to do on a Wednesday night, you know. I'm up to speed on the Disney Plus and the Netflix, you know. It's
All right, Tony, you need a glass of water?
No, I'm fine.
You're fine, man.
I could talk for a living, you know.
I know. I'm loving this. I gave him a juice, everybody, before, right? Thank you, Chris, on the juice. Thank you, Chris. Gave him a juice before. I said, then I made him a coffee.
All natural products.
Yes. And then I'm like, right, because now I want to talk to you about embracing the amazing for autism. You know, embracing the amazing for autism. There's a 30th of March. Look, Thursday, the 30th of March, you're in Cook Island News. Autism Cook Islands families met up over the weekend at the Aumata Mini Golf in Arorangi. Autism Cook Islands. For Autism Cook Islands, ACI, family networking is all about families coming together for fellowship in a fun and safe environment. More than 16 families met for the first networking event this year at the Aumata Mini Golf in Arorangi on Sunday. VP Vice President Tony Fe'au welcomed the new members who have joined the organization and also thanked the volunteers. Blue Day. Yeah. Let's talk about Blue Day, Autism Cook Islands, because, I mean, we haven't always had Autism Cook Island Society, have we? No.
So Autism Cook Islands, a few years ago, before we sort of were part of a team that rebooted it. There was a very strong team, a bunch of families on running Autism Cook Islands, I think it was even before we came to the island. So, so it's been around in the sense that we've had an acknowledgement in the community from families that were children with autism. So, and I think 2017 or 16, maybe earlier, we got a diagnosis for our oldest son that he was on the autism spectrum. And obviously that's as a dad, when you have a son, I think sometimes you have certain dreams, like, you know, oh man, I was committed. I'm going to coach rugby. I'm going to be a part of their games. You know, I could see that all these exciting sort of dreams you have. And then when you get some news like that, I've talked to dads on the island who get the news, and I say, you know, sometimes it feels like it's like a mourning, like you're mourning what could be, and then mixed up the uncertainty of what will be.
just need to understand what we're dealing with.
So I think there's that, so those mixed bag of feelings, but then at the end of the day,
and having support, Tony?
Having support.
Going in the same bucket.
Yeah, going in the same bucket. We're all in this, we've all got the same. Autism affects children differently. It's a spectrum, of course. But, Simone and I, and we met with a previous member of the old Autism Cook Islands who had teenage children at the time, or older children, and another family who were recently diagnosed. So then we decided, let's reboot it and get some families together. And I remember the first, I think we were at Celebration Church, there's picnic tables there.
Yeah, opposite the airport.
Opposite the airport, yeah.
Celebration.
So we were, we sort of out on the picnic tables. I remember one of our meetings we got a constitution, all the things you need to get incorporated. And then we had a patron, which was Auntie Nikki Rattle. We had, Gloria Tinidal. She was the president. And I think we had Carl Matheson was, and Katrina Matheson that had their child was their boy, had just recently diagnosed. So yeah, and then there was us, and then we just started from there. Just families, we started doing get-togethers, and then we did a couple of workshops that we had. We had an Irish lady who was working with one of the families here, and she offered in her spare time to do a workshop for the families that were. So it was good. So it's small beginnings, humble beginnings. We decided we'll make autism. April Autism Awareness Month, and we decided we would just put it out there to the community, and the response from our community over autism in the first Blue Day.
April 6th is Blue Day. The theme is embracing the amazing, and this is your fifth annual Blue Day.
Yeah. So the first one was we were just blown away by the support of the community. We put it out there. I've got a background in marketing. We've got people on we're blessed with very talented people on our team. We put it out there. Some of our team got the media involved. And on their first Blue Day, I just remember just how much response we had through Facebook, driving around the community, invitations we got to go to school assemblies at that time. And it's really grown to be a time where we do fundraisers. We use it as a fundraiser for our mission and our work in it. So you've seen Blue Day, how much people sort of come out and turn up for Blue Day and donate to us directly. And then Autism Awareness Month. The first couple of years, it was a lot of community events, a lot of awareness events. We used to run this evening of games, and we sort of pivoted a little bit to make it more about, because we started seeing families sort of, with diagnosis for their children, or their children were on the autism spectrum, but they sort of just weren't able to do much with them because, and the school system was still, finding its feet. So we, as that grew, we sort of pivoted to doing more things for our families during the month, that particular month, and things that would benefit them. So the last 2 or 3 years, we've eased up on the community, big community events, and focused more on our families. And man, we've been blessed. We had enough funding. We've got two staff members. So we've got a general manager who manages all of our overall activities, and we've got a staff member who manages a portion of our programs for the children. We've been able to access funding from the New Zealand HighCom Social Impact Fund through the Cook Islands government. Generosity, obviously, from businesses supporting us, and there's little things like the Pacific Resort would open up every year. They host our families for a beach day. There's so many businesses that support, even when it comes to Blue Day. And Te Kara Run was another big event that we started to run sort of in November as a fundraiser and an awareness event. Businesses come on board, people turn out and do the run. It's exciting. It's a lot of fun. So Autism Cook Islands, we get a lot of awareness in the community. We do our best. But being able to have staff on board, and it's sort of now we've just got a board, and we sort of set the course, and then we've got an amazing team that sort of executes, because you know what it's like on a board. Everyone, we all work full time. So having the funds available to have someone to help put legs on our so Kat Jensen is our program manager, is our manager. She's passionate about our families, and she's got a lot of energy to implement the programs that we do. And yeah, so it's the strength of an organization is always based on the people, the strength and the vision of the leaders at the top, and the generosity of the volunteers and the families and the businesses in our area. So yeah, I think it's been embracing the amazing. So this year, yeah, we had we ran a school holiday program. So it wasn't, we probably didn't have the resources to have the children every day. And but we were able to shoulder tap a number of businesses for our children to go hang out. The crash fire is the crash fire at the airport. It's always a popular one for our children, our families. We went out, we tried something different this year. We did some breathing and the stretching with they had a couple of yoga teachers at Cisnock.
Okay.
So we did some of them. Yeah, it's you know, it's I don't know how these things come about. Kat's an amazing manager, so she shoulder taps in. And but when some of these things are like our teenage kids, because we've got sort of two groups, the little primary school kids, and then we've got kids who are going through puberty and moving into adolescence and finishing from school, you know, in the next couple of years. They loved it. Apparently they really love the stretching and the breathing, which we know that there's some benefits for children with autism, ADHD. And then we did the family, the team out of Bedrock, Anthony Brown, I think he's with the KR.
The QR.
Yeah.
Oh, the lawyer. Yes. Yeah. I interviewed two on QR on a podcast.
Yeah, let's go. So he owns Bedrock. Eh?
He owns Bedrock up the back in North Dakota.
So his Sylvie and Michelle.
Yeah, the artist. The carver.
They hosted us, Hori Miller is up there.
Okay.
And so they hosted us for an arts/music/fun morning for our children. And then the last one we did was for our older children, a mechanic, basic mechanics workshop with William Taripo, changing tires, checking oil, that kind of thing for our older kids. So yeah, it's been, I'm pretty sure that's don't leave anybody out to, yep, it's the four school holiday activities we did during our April
just recently,
for our families.
Yeah, the holidays.
Just so recently. We do that and we, you know, the Ministry of Education, Andre up there, he's been a great help for us, you know, sort of connecting families, because with the Ministry of Education, when they have a child who is diagnosed, they have they've got to find teacher aides for them and learning support for them. And yeah, he's been great to connect those families with us. And if families don't want to connect with us, that's fine. But I've found over the last 2 to 3 years, families are more open to, one, accepting that their child may need some extra help or maybe on the spectrum, getting them assessed. And then connecting them into our community but a lot of that comes around the awareness. We're getting younger families, people you know, who are probably support. A little more open to support, to saying, hey, my child is,
and then you
a little
can
bit different.
It's like, it's just, I don't know, it's like having a growers group,
growers association,
association, so that all the growers can talk to each other about what they're facing growing, you know, what are you using as fertilizer? Oh, I'm using this. Or what gumboots are you using, right? So it's like any organization or society with, you know, autism, that, and you've created somewhere where I can come to as a parent and go, I don't know what to do. Like, I can read and read and read and read on the internet about how to help my child.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm so fortunate that I have a group that I can come to and I can go, what did you do in that instance? How did you, you know, when your child was 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, you know? And then just feel that I'm not alone.
It's a big part. We started doing
community.
Yeah, we started doing community gatherings for that reason. So we'd, you know, and it's so interesting. I enjoy going along. You get to talk to some of the dads and some of the families. But like when you have a child like with autism, when the way they react to pressure or stress can be distracting. If you're like my son used to have tantrums in the plane. And for us, it's like, you know, the part of being an island parent is like, be quiet, man. You know, just behave yourself. But part of it's just that feeling of, man, it's embarrassing. My child won't stop crying. What I've found in our Autism Cook Islands community gatherings, if a child has a meltdown or isn't happy or doesn't want to participate, well, I'm sitting there as they're going, I feel you, man. I understand. Hey, if your kid doesn't want to join in the game and they want to walk around over there and play, man, all good. or, you know, they don't want to come be part of what we're doing, or they're crying, or they want to eat now. They don't want to wait for the cook gets out. Man, it's,
yeah,
that's, there's a, you know, I think that's like anything, like church, sports groups, where there's a gathering of people who are all on the same page, like-minded.
Yeah, like-minded.
Then, I found that we run, during the school, the school term, because we have a holiday program, but school terms, we run like a Lego programs, Lego Master Builder program, which is basically using Lego, not for them to simply Lego, but to help teach communication and social skills. So the program is building the Lego thing. They've got a leader in the group. We've got a group of volunteers who will lead the group. And then the children have to work together to build this piece of Lego. It's connected to an iPad. So there's some programs and robotics as well. So it's been an amazing program. So for our children, especially our older children, it's a powerful, you know, it's great to see how these kids, how much more talented, in my opinion, that they show, because it's something they're into. My son goes, my other son, who's not on the spectrum, goes along with him. There's good support. But I found even just seeing families there, some of the newer families sit in with their child and do their Lego, like, all those things count towards feeling like, hey, I'm a part of something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a swimming, so the Lego program we run in-house.
You know, I'm not different. You are.
Yeah. We're like, over here.
What's wrong with you?
Over here. The strange is how we roll, man. We're embracing the amazing within him. So that, and then we have a swim program. So part of it came out of wanting our children to learn to be confident in the water.
Yeah.
But so we just got a report from this, from Kieran and Leslie Chan. I don't know if they're part of Kogan's Aquatic Federation. So they run the teaching classes, and they had a little report back on all the children on their progress during for the swimming and the confidence. So they teach the proper swimming technique, but also water confidence, putting the head under the water and that kind of.
Mm.
And our children on the spectrum, generally most of them love the water, but being able to add some skill to that. And I remember some of the first sessions, some of the kids they won't get in the water, or they'll get in the water and they'll swim with their parents or their sibling far away. But as the weeks progress, it's great to see them being, they may not be facing away from the group far away, they may be facing towards the group but far away, but they're still participating in their own way. So I found there's a lot of power in some of the programs that we put together for our children who may not have a supportive environment at home or within the school. At home, in the sense of families like us, we don't really know how to. I just know my son doesn't like doing something. So, you know, how do I get him out of there? How do I get him to do something different? You know, or it's, and I think for families, and I hope this rings true for our families that are part of our programs. You know, we need to expand the world of our children with autism, because their world, and you'll know this, growing up in the Pacifica community, our children with special needs end up, they'll go to school, and when that school program's finished, they won't do much. They'll come home, go to school, and then they're the ones that end up living at home with mama and the papa, because there's very little prospect for them to work, or there's no program. So, you know, I think there's, being here in the Cook Islands, you know, we're wanting to hopefully expand the world of our children. So it's not just school, home, church, school, home, mum and dad's work. There's other things that they can do and be involved with. And I think in also having like the creative center on island for our children when they sort of graduate from school. We've had some that go, some of the more high needs children who probably have, very little in terms of employable skills. I don't necessarily believe that. I think that we can always find something.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say,
but
you think that.
No, but but they can go hang out with Danny and the team up there. Happy to sort of
host them. They could run something totally.
Yeah, well, look, we had one of our kids, Maki Tipohoro's daughter Eden. Like, she's a great cook. Man, she cooks as mean as banana cake and cooks stuff. So. It's, and some people say to me, "Oh, you're autism. They're a genius."
It's your next,
their
own building.
Yeah,
with their own cafe that they're running.
Yeah,
you know, their own little businesses inside their business. Yep. You know, like what Creative Center did, like putting the they create all the creative stuff at the Creative Center, then they take it down to the market and sell it. Yeah. You know, like,
and utilizing their school. I think we have one of the older members, and their boy is in his 20s now, Ray Solomon, you know, the son, Ray and Eva Solomon, their son helps them out in their business, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we, you know, where we can,
and he's integral to their business.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. He's the muscle. Sorry, Ray. You know, when you get up there, he's the muscle. But I think for our families, we started and have developed the program. Now it's for implementing. It's called the Transition Program. So the program is about taking our older teenagers and teaching them skills to be able to be a part of the workforce or tertiary. So it's transitioning them from teenagehood to adulthood. So that's in the works. There's a lot of policy and stuff. We're able to get some funding to be able to run a program like that. But like anything, you know, we've got programs, a program manager, but it's built on the shoulders of volunteers and people who have skill in that area to be able to donate their time to help us with the policies in it. So it's all that's probably the next big exciting project for us at Autism Cool Barns, a transition program. Yeah, I mean, we would love for it to be up and running and off the ground ASAP, but you've also got to be realistic and be patient. And yeah. So there's a time, you know, when the time comes.
And the steps are coming. The time, yeah. You know, it's been, 5 years and fantastic.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good things happening there. But no, I think with Simone and I have been on the executive team there for as long as it's been going and just seeing the progress that's, you know, that a few years of hard grind and strategic decisions can get you. So, you know, the transition program, as our children get older, we're faced with different challenges. So
yeah.
We've got a bunch of kids in a certain age range that in 4 years, they'll all be finished high school. They'll all be, you know, looking for the next stage, what it looks like in their lives. And hopefully we can be a part of sort of opening doors for them. Yeah. And obviously we're very confident that there's support in our community for that because of what we've seen so far. So, yeah.
Champion. You're doing well, bro.
Thanks, man.
Now we're going to talk about your graphic design.
Yep, that's cool.
Right, graphic design, digital marketing consultant.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. The reason why I have to do this all at once, everyone, okay, people are busy. So to get Tony, to get any guest to sit with me, they're busy. So, you know, like from here, Tony's back out into what he's doing. And so, you know, push, pause, record, go to the bathroom, get a drink of water.
Hey, bring this up. This could, you could get like 3 episodes out of this one. You'd be sorted for 3 weeks.
And you know that, but I know that getting you back here 3 times is going to, because we've had to reschedule this 3 times.
That's right, yeah. And so yesterday I was ready to roll and then.
Yep.
You had a deadline for a client that I said.
That's right. And so that's why we got to smash it all.
All right.
And then anyone listening will just listen to it in three sittings.
That's cool.
Okay. Right. Okay. And that was intermission. And now we're back into the second half.
Well, part 3 of the interview. Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah. Tony Bell, graphic design, digital marketing consultant. Experienced corporate graphic designer, digital marketing specialist. Wow.
Wide range. When you say it like that, I'm like, you're far right. Like, is that from my, I've been adjusted.
That's from your LinkedIn.
It's a bit up there. Where's the keeping your high standard?
That's from your LinkedIn.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I have a wide range of experience in both the public and private sector.
Well, at least it's true.
Totally. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's on LinkedIn, so it's true, right?
It better be true, because when they find out, when they start working with you, it's like, oh, I thought you were a specialist in this. Anywho.
Did you actually study that, Tony?
Funny thing, after high school, I didn't study. I went to, my wife, obviously, she went to university.
Yep.
I went to university, but to pick her up or to go to the cafe. A couple of classes, I'll sit in with her. And, you know, that was my experience of university. So, because you can't, you know, it's like in Auckland, you can't just park your car. Like, it's cheaper to get your boyfriend to come pick you up. So anyway, so I went and worked in the restaurant industry. Burger King. Have you heard of a Burger King before? Anyway, I went to work at Burger King after high school. I was a bit lost, to be honest.
You weren't lost.
Well, I was in terms of, like, what I wanted to do next in my life, you know.
Yeah.
I actually had a, you know, we were part of a little youth group, and I had a just a strong encounter with God. You know, I really, God, like, man, I really felt like he was, man, he was calling me to do something and to
support. He was calling you to support your wife.
To support my future wife. Once you need to pick her up.
Your future wife, pick her up.
Pick her up on time. Pick her up on time. What a poor, you know, my poor
wife.
Take her Burger King. Take her Burger King. Pick her up and then go to Burger King and drop some off on the way back past.
And then get my staff discount.
Yeah, but we go there for dinner. And I think I put on like 30 kilos there a couple of years at Burger King. Yeah, it's just like eating. And I was working nights. So it's like, yeah, anyway. But anyway, so I've had, as an 18-year-old, sort of had this account of God, and it set me on a bit of a trajectory. I'm getting to the graphic design part. And I felt like, I was going to be a pastor. That was what I was like, man, this is what I feel like God's pulling me into the ministry. Didn't know what it looked like. I was doing youth group stuff at the time. So I thought, I'm going to be a youth minister. I even remember telling my future wife, you know, if we got married, we're going to be poor because I'm going to be working for the church. You know, you had that kind of mentality. Eh? So it was kind of like, that was what I sort of, so at our church back home in Auckland, we would, they put us in charge of, someone in charge of the 11 to 14 year olds. So these are intermediate kids. So we just go, okay, we had the boys brigade from our church and a couple of girls, all church kids. And I used to get the minister to print off. Can we print off some notices on the photostat machine back at the photocopier?
Oh, wow, yeah.
And he was a minister. He wasn't a designer, so he did a couple for me. And I thought, oh man, I can't, give them to the kids, take them. But then we wanted our kids to invite their friends along. So I thought, that needs a little bit more than just a.
Oh, piece so you of wanted a flyer that looked cool.
One cool flyers. So
to entice the youth
to come to.
Come to youth group.
And it was like the idea was we had kids who were starting to open their hearts to God, and a lot of them were like, oh, my friends are coming. So, instead of giving them a A4 sheet that's been, just printing on it and just chopping it up with a scissors, I thought, okay, I'll make her. We had theme night. So it's one that we're going to do some theme night things. So we had like a night. There was my younger brother, he was great at running games, and he wanted to do like a ninja night. So all the kids would dress up like ninjas, and all the games are based around ninja games. Just the things you do to try and entertain kids.
Brilliant.
Anyway, so the problem is that we've got just regular notices. So I started designing our little flyers. And that was my first. Around Ninja Night. Or around handout cards. We've got a special service next Friday. That was my first sort of foray into graphic design.
Were you rendering them?
No, I was using Microsoft Publisher and PowerPoint. So PowerPoint was way better than Publisher. It was a little bit more flexible and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I did that. So that's how I started as a graphic in graphic design. I did that for years. And then in 2009.
We
were already here.
We
started the Celebration Church, which we were part of. For the first year, we were part of running the church. So that was my time. Again, doing all the church flyers and stuff. Presentations were all done
on
that
church, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've been
2009.
Yeah, 2008 was our first when the church started. Anyway, 2009, I'm going, okay, I need to get a proper job.
Yeah.
And at that stage, the pastors were coming over from New Zealand more often. So that's good. The church
celebration.
So basically, it was running itself. Great, everything's going good. So I was always into this graphic design stuff, and there was a graphic design job going at Cook Islands News. It was an entry-level job, the layout job with Maxine,
your cousin. That's what I'm going,
So that's where I've known you. You've been around. Because you used to come and see Maxine in those days.
I used to come and see Maxine at Cook Island News in 2009 because Athena was born in 2009, February.
Yep. Who's that Maxine? That's my cousin. Your cousin's there. Or friends.
Yeah. And I would come and see Maxine because she was the graphic designer.
Right. Yeah. So I was there. So
as the assistant.
As the assistant, yeah. The night guy. So during my time with Celebration, we met some guys from YWAM, and the guy gave me his hard drive to give me some movies. And then he says, hey, I've got this graphic. I said, man, how did you make these? So he's designed a flyer way better than mine. And I used Adobe Photoshop and all that kind of Photoshop and stuff. Oh, okay. So he gave me that Photoshop. He gave me those days on the drive, he gave me the pirated versions of the Adobe Suite. So I opened Photoshop and I'd done a YouTube tutorial. YouTube was early stages then on the terrible dial-up we had here. And I'd done a tutorial on how to put my head on a Spartan's body for one of our, just for fun. So it was a good job. I thought I did a great job. So when we go, I go to apply for this job. It's an evening job. And we weren't running any youth group or anything. So, that's good. I'll do it in the evenings. And
at Cook Island News.
Cook Island News. Yeah. We had a young daughter, Maiva, I could look after her during the day.
Yeah.
And then this mom comes, there's calculations that seem like they should work until real life. So I went to the interview with a guy over there, and he said, do you have any experience in graphic design? I said, yeah, I've been designing stuff for my church. And he said, have you used Adobe Suite? We use InDesign, Photoshop. I said, oh, absolutely. Yep. But the only experience I'd had was I put my head on a splattered body, on a pirated version. So they said, that's great. I had a technical interview the next day, which basically they're going to sit me in front of the computer and give me something to do. And that night on our terrible dial-up
internet back then, yep.
I went on YouTube and did tutorials on how to use InDesign, which is the program they wanted me to. So that's how I started. And that's when I started to learn professional graphic design. So Maxine was my mentor. She was the day shift of another girl. They were doing the day, and then at nighttime I'd come in to lay out the paper. So I worked with the editor and the printer. So that was my first foray, and it was a real baptism by fire, because the newspaper is daily and there's a time pressure. So I learned how to use the tools quickly.
Yeah.
And I had to learn how to use them quickly. So what happened that year, as I learned that, I started to say goodbye to PowerPoint and started doing designs we ended up starting the youth group the next year, I think. So I started doing the youth group designs back on this software, as well as that learning on the job. And then, so that was my first foray. So I've been doing professional graphic design, i.e. paid, since then. So it's about 13 or 14 years now. So that's how I got started.
Ages. Maiva, your daughter, and Athena, because Athena's 14. She's turning 15 in February.
Yeah, that's right. So that's how I started in graphic design. And then I left.
You just reminded me. I actually forgot. That's
what I was saying. I've been here long enough. You know people's faces So for me that was a bit of a lease on life. Finding another passion, something that I was really good at. I ended up at the same time as I got that job, I got a job being a tour guide for Coconut Tours, which was the buggy and quad bike tour that Moana Hunter and Fodil had.
Yeah.
So I was doing that, and then I was
during the day,
and then in the evening I was going to Cook Island Zoos. Eventually, because
then your daughter Maiva would have been in preschool.
Preschool,
you would have been able to do the coconut tours during the day. Yep. Get her from preschool at 2 because you'd be finished.
Yep.
Go home. Simone would come home. Then you would head to the newspaper at 5 o'clock.
4 o'clock at the paper. So it was like that. And then when we had our second child, had a nanny.
I remember
Mom Mita.
Yeah.
So I left Cook Islands News for a year. They opened Te Varanui, so I was the full-time MC.
Yes, you were.
Te Varanui. Oh, yeah. That's right. And I was doing Te Varanui full-time, so we had 3 shows a week and in doing the quad bike tours. Honestly, it's probably
MC at Te Varanui.
And that's where I cut my teeth doing pro MC. So the MC is the same. I started the MC youth group and then church stuff and then all your friends' weddings. And then Te Varanui was my first
professional. That would have been about 2010.
Yeah. So 2000.
That's where you cut your teeth. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a metaphor for children when their teeth are coming through.
Yeah, that's cut right. So teeth. Doing things for friends versus doing it in a paid environment, there's a little bit more pressure. It's different. So, yeah. But, I mean, those things those things came naturally to me anyway, which was the MC side of things. So, then after about a year, John Woods, who's the owner of Cook Islands News, rang me. He said he wanted to catch up and that they were looking at making the paper colour. They were doing the colour printing for the paper, and he asked me if I was interested in coming back and being a part of the team to implement that. Now, I'm a graphic designer by trade, but he wanted me to run the graphic design team now. So I ended up finishing at Te Varanui and then going back to Cook Islands News. And then I did about another 5 years there doing running the graphic design. And then John got sick, and I ended up being the general manager there. So, and graphic design, production management, and then the general management role, we had a great admin and finance team with Teddy. So she ran a great. She'd work with Liz for the admin and finance.
Yeah, Liz Woods. Yeah,
we had a strong editorial team. So most of my role there was just managing an overall vision and reporting back to John Liz, and a lot of HR. We had a lot of HR challenges with people coming from New Zealand and all that
kind of stuff. Workers, you mean?
Workers, yeah, journos, especially journos, because journos, you know, very small pool of journalists here in the Cook Islands. So we, again, same as the school, just bring them in from overseas. So that's how I got into graphic design. And then when I was working with you, I finished with Cook Islands News and I was doing freelance. So that's and then I got into digital marketing. My biggest client was Cook Islands Tourism, and they had an opening there for a digital marketing executive, someone to manage their digital marketing team. So they asked me if I was interested. I'd say, yeah, I'm keen. And I didn't know much about digital marketing except for the graphics part of it. People asked me to do designs for their mock-ups for their websites, design for their Facebook pages and stuff. And then the door opened for that role, and that's where I picked up a passion for the digital marketing side. So I was always already doing marketing through Cook Islands News. And when you design, like when we work together with you, it's kind of, you're not just putting together stuff. It all should, the design should have a purpose or an outcome. So we were putting together it started out as a DLE.
DLE, which is the black and white one.
Black and white, which we expanded, we started, and then we expanded.
It's this one here, bro.
We
did this one first. This DLE.
Can I give me this piece of history up in here?
Yeah.
And I remember particularly because you were very specific about black and white.
Yeah.
And then probably just like the, you know.
Because you said to me, because this was 2015.
2015, yeah.
And you said to me, you're going to do it in black and white? I went, yeah, bro. And then you go, can I ask why you're doing this, this fishing brochure?
Yeah,
for Brendan.
Let me tell you the technical side of this. It's set on a rack card, and you want it to stand out from your, which is for me, it's bright colors, a strong message at the top, something that's going to make me stop and look. So to pull out the rack card and then read the rest. Not this lady who's turned up with her little children at my house. I want all black and white. I was, you know what? You're the client, and it made sense the way you explained it. And it would be.
So I said to you, this is what I said to you. I said, Tony. Okay, 2015. I've been like, you know, off the grid with marketing, 7 years, 2 kids, off the grid, totally off the grid. I come out and I'm like, okay, I need to help Brendan. So I say to you, the reason why we're going to do it in black and white, Tony, is that the other 57 brochures are in color. Yeah,
that's right. I remember that.
So we need to be like, why is that black and white?
Let me see this thing.
Only black and white brochure in amongst, and that is the only way that we're going to get someone's eye, because it's not color. And you just went, wow.
Yeah, well, look, it's always design. If it makes sense.
Remember, we did that and we kept it real simple.
Yeah.
And then I said, no, just put his face so they know who they're dealing with.
Yeah.
Then we did the other side together. And then I said to you, icons, brother.
Icons, yep.
Icons. And that was like the first person 9 years ago to put an icon thing up. Yeah. And
it wasn't just icons, because I think we talked about, you know, I want it to be like on a board.
Mm.
So we've done icon work, not in that sense, like it's like just regular icon, but you want your everything to be. And so that's how we ended up with these designs, because you want it to be on a board. And it's let's look at a. Something that's not like your regular icons that you'd find. We had to sort of
designing the brochure, I said to you, we've also got to duplicate it and put it on a 2 meter huge board.
Yeah.
And then I was saying to you, overseas when you're driving and the petrol station comes up, the petrol station has icons, the cup of coffee, the picture of the pie, and the picture of the bathroom. Mm. So immediately, You know. And then I also remember saying to you, we're going to sit and we're going to do this and we're not going to touch it ever again.
Mm.
And we didn't.
Mm.
You know, we put it up.
It was going to be on giant 2 meter boards. So we had to make sure it was going to be like what
you wanted. Yeah, and we did that. And we haven't had to touch them in, 9 years. Mm. And that's. Was one thing I learned from a man, Mark McCarthy. He said, you know, when you do something, try and get 10 years out of it.
Yeah.
And so try, and so that you don't have to go back 2 years later and go, oh, you know, I've got to change that, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then interestingly enough, Tony, with this project that Hayden and I are doing with the digital discount card, we just launched it on January the 4th, right? Everybody listens to my show knows that. So Hayden came here in March this year and see all the boards around my office, right? The boards that you and I designed. I said to Hayden, these are all coming down and they're going to be re-stickered with the new project because that's not me anymore. And then I had a friend who got off the airplane the other day, Tony, with his wife and baby, and he came into this office and he goes, you're not going to, these two in your office are going to stay, eh? Like, no. You're not going to re-sticker these two, eh? These are going to be like, you know, the ones, like, what do you call them? The collector's items, right? Yeah. And I said, absolutely. These two are going to stay as collector's items. But the rest of them are changing. But that's the first time in ever 9 years.
Yeah, you've definitely got your value for
totally
for the money and the effort you put into that, yeah. So.
And you know what else? Remember, do you remember me sitting with you, Tony, and saying to you, way back then, I said, I found out it's this much money to put a brochure at the airport, right? Or I found out it's this much money you have to pay to. So I reckon if I invest the same amount of money in the art and the boards around my office, I'm going to get, like, which I did, nearly 10 years out of them.
Amen.
Yeah. Nearly 10 years out of them. Because it was like to get three businesses there was going to cost us like $6,000 or something, which is fair enough. Every year, three businesses. So each business was about $2,000 to advertise there.
To have a stand there.
Yeah, at the airport. Fair enough, right? So I had three that I needed to put there, you know, Brendan's one, my one, you know, and I think, you know.
Yeah, the tour part, I think. That's
that's right. That's $6,000 a year, three businesses. But if I invest $6,000, which is what I did with these, they lasted 9 years.
Mm. So, remember when you did that, you had the, you came to me because the big ones in there were going to be a part of a wall. I'm going to have a wall, Tony, on the side of my, and there it is. That's a great man. So you know, obviously it's
I'm gonna have a wall, Tony, on the side of my business and I'm gonna advertise it and I'm gonna charge $1 a day, just like the newspaper.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I think that's you know, when you look back on what was available at that time, and you know, it turned out to be you know, we always roll the dice when you spend money on your marketing and advertising.
True.
And but sometimes you just gotta go, well, this is not the norm. Signage was a norm. Remember, that's a norm, but doing having it and having you because you already had the measurements, I remember, because you already, this is already going to be on your site. You're going to have multiple of them. It makes sense in the sense that you're going to sell the space, right? You're going to sell the spaces. So that's good. I mean, that's what you want to hear, I guess, from, you know, business owners and who are listening, that you are investing in something that is going to be as long-term.
And it's still out there.
Yeah, they're still out there. Actually, we'll pass up. Man, these have survived well, given that it's directly in line with the sun for most of the day. So often you leave the signs in Raro, they'll fade after a while. And you only have the images faded and there's just a white bit there where the image used to be. So they've lasted.
Because all that research was aluminium boards, aluminium screws, nails, you know, put them in a way where they can be taken down, stickers off, re-stickered, put back up. They've moved around a lot because the wall started off 3 meters by two, and then now it's three times that length.
Wow.
Because
you've added the.
Yeah, and also because I added, but also more people wanted to advertise.
Right.
You know, like, why is my business not up there?
which is a great sign, right? I mean, people are chasing you for your business. So, yeah, so the graphic design, yeah, we've got history, man. We've got history, and you're probably one of my first private sector clients.
True
private sector.
Because
I'd when I came out of Pogana's News again, I was across the road at tourism, you know, and I was kind of like, okay, what to do next? And then Noile Materiki saw me. She was out on one of her power walks, and she saw me. She would come rushing across the road. She said, Tony, I heard you're leaving there. Yeah, well, you're a graphic designer. I said, yeah. So that was the door into working with tourism.
What a great, I mean, check you out there. How long were you there for at Cook Islands Tourism?
I mean, look, that's probably one of my favorite jobs that I've ever had, you know. One, because of the learning. I learned so much there. And two, it's working with a government agency, which is not well known for being progressive and forward thinking. Our agencies, you know, it's just the way it is.
You mean government agencies?
Government agencies in general. Yeah. Okay. And part of it is the structure of government, okay, and the structure of how things are. That, you know, a lot of things are associated, not just if you've got a progressive person in power, they're subject to a board or the structure of governance in within a. So I think it's just, that's just how it rolls. And this is one of the nuances of Cook Islands working in the government's the public sector. But tourism was different. So Noileen was my direct. So they set up a structure where me and another girl, Claire Wilson, we were at the same level in the middle management there. And Carla Eggleton, who's now the CEO.
Yeah, she's now the CEO. Congratulations.
Well done, Carla. And but she was very open, and the thing I liked about working with Carla and the team there is that if you came with an idea backed with evidence and enthusiasm to do the yards to get it done, she'd always give you a shot. She'd always give you a shot. I learned that, but here's some of the ideas I came with, like, because she's been in this song, she's like, you know what, we tried that in 2000 whatever with these people and it didn't work because of ABC. So at least that was for me. You know, they're working in a progressive environment. So tourism, I started there as a contractor in 2015. And then in middle of 2017, during their reporting, every year they report to the government, they brought me on as in this digital marketing executive role. So that was my first project with them, was helping them with reporting their stats and that. And then I was there for three and a bit years. And then, man, I was exposed to so many opportunities, so many great people. So because tourism is the leading industry here, I think a lot of government support, got a good budget there. But what they do with their budget, bringing in like expert marketers, expert people in branding to help us, the markets within the individual markets, America, especially in America, Australia, New Zealand, they access like agencies and people who are skilled and way further ahead than I was at head office. And I was able to sit with those guys and glean off them and watch how they worked and build brands, what questions they asked, what was the most important thing about marketing. So I learned, it was like 3 years. I could say that's my degree. I 3 years in marketing, basically hands on, learning on the job. I was the head of the team as well. So I had to be ahead of the young team that I had, so I started to learn, and I found a real passion for digital marketing. So Facebook, Instagram,
TikTok. You got TikTok.
Yeah. I'm on TikTok, but the TikTok is.
And so you started liking it, is what you
enjoying
mean.
Enjoying it. Website, web development. But not so much just doing it. It was
in 2015.
2017. So it's 15. So a lot of it, it's the technical side, yes. But a lot of it goes back to basic marketing principles, awareness, bringing people down the funnel in terms of awareness, and then we've got contemplation funnel. And the sales funnel, and then conversion down the bottom. So the science and the psychology around that through the vehicle of digital marketing was what I really enjoyed. So yeah, I spent my time there. I learned as much as I could. I was listening to all sorts of podcasts. I was taking every opportunity if they had a consultant come in. I always want to be a part of the project, or we had a graphic graphic designer who had come over from Australia. His name was Shane Wall, and I got to sit with him watching him work. And when you're a graphic designer and you're not normally, I was interested in what he's doing on screen, but I kept looking at the keyboard because it's like watching he's like double jointed, all the shortcut keys and stuff, and like, man, this guy knows. And then the psychology around why we're using this color, why we place text here, what we can do, what kind of, so that was a huge, I was really interested in that because I've been in graphic design and production and marketing, but just at tourism and credit to our minister at the time was Henry Puna, the board led by Ewan Smith, Halatoa Fua, the CEO, and then of course down to our part of the building, Carla and Noileen. We had a real good period, and then, before COVID hit, of just really advancing in the industry as well. I think through the work that was happening at tourism, there was a lot of support for what we were doing. It seemed to be, Carla tells me stories of going to these global breakfast updates and people standing up and basically shaking their fist at tourism and the executive because they're not happy with how things are run and certain controversies that had surrounded tourism in that time, and to be in a place where you go to global breakfast updates and people really, you know, because of the quality of the work that we're putting out and the vision and working backwards from a mission, you know, they could see the quality of what we're doing and seemed to be a lot of support for what we were doing in tourism. And being in the digital marketing space, that was it's a fun, and people were like, you know, we were able to receive some of the accolade directly from the industry because of they could see what we're doing on Instagram and Facebook and through our comms with the industry. And so it's, you know, there was a, and I think working for the important part, if you're in a government agency or public sector, is that the people around you, they give you, you know, they, the people above you are progressive in their thinking and happy to take risks within the, obviously within the budgets, you know, it's all about budget and the appropriation of your budget and where it goes. But that was a huge learning curve for me. And I think that really set me up for what I'm doing today, you know. And so tourism, and I think working in an environment with, so I had Daniel Fisher and Taylor Bellows, they were my first team. And then we added a few extras, Sandy and Louisa Woodyard. So there was, I had interns over the years. So, I think those kinds of, that kept it fresh for me. I mean, I was approaching my 40s when I started there, and we had these young kids who were enthusiastic about social media but I always thought, oh yeah, you know, what I bring to the team was a bit of a mature, a steady hand, and just sticking to the vision, you know, and sticking on a path and making sure that we, you know, because everything we do, we did in that, and that was the other huge thing, was accountability. Everything we did, we reported. I went on a trip, through the marketing side of things, and we'd always come back and report, and they'd make us stand up, halatoa, and stand up in a staff meeting and give a verbal sort of presentation on where we'd been. So I really liked that part of that environment as well. There seemed to be like just accountability, you know, when it gets to spending money, because it's government appropriation, you know, you having the right systems in place and being accountable. If we said we're going to do X, Y, Z, and it hadn't been done, you know, Carla used to have a whiteboard in her office with everybody's things that they said they're going to do, all the projects. And man, I remember, okay, we've got a meeting, whiteboard meeting on Monday. Well, everyone, man, I'll be hustling in. Okay, I'll make sure I've got all of our stuff on the whiteboard sorted, because, and it just, it was a, you know, I think they fostered a, and I'm big on this, fostered a culture of, you know, well, speaking of, for me anyway, there was a fostered a culture of, you know, excellence, pushing for excellence, accountability, but also family. Eh? There was a, my father-in-law got sick while I was there, and I was back and forth from New Zealand when he passed away. And, you know, they seemed to be able to just find a way to keep moving forward, but also to support me through, you know, leave. And yeah, it was different things like that. And I think that made a huge impact on how I would go into any situation to lead, or to, you know, what would be ideal to actually help people thrive in an environment. Yeah. And Cook Islands News was much the same, but it's so high pressure that it's every day is just a hustle. So it's a bit different. It was, you know, I think just helping people to stay alive, you know, was the number one for my team. Yeah. Making sure everyone's sort of, if you're good, then you're good. If you're not good, you need to tell me, because we're just too busy to really be pastoral, because it's a high pressure environment. And at times the tourism was very much like that. Yeah, and unless people tell me, and I'll tell the team, hey, just if you're not, maybe you just talk. And I'll just be an open book, and I just, sometimes you hear, some would say their complaints, or people were just having a moan, but I think that's a healthy part if you're doing it in the right place, you know. So someone who, you know, who's above you and who is, can help you sort of navigate through those challenges. And when you're working with people who are hungry, it's Taylor Bellows who was, like, she's wonderful at her job, but I could see that she's hungry for more. So you have to balance that. Hey, I'd love for you to stay here at tourism and work for us, but also be open to talk about, well, you know, what would be next for you if you were, you know, and it's not like she didn't like the job. It was more that you could see that she was, you know, some people are just hungry. And Daniel Fisher was the same. You just tell them they don't want to just settle in and do it at just a good enough job. You know, they want to be excellent at what they do. So providing that room and giving affirmation. I was a little bit embarrassing. I was like, I used to be like a, you know, a doting parent when their kids do great things. You know, I got to stand in front of the board a few times and I'd just be talking about these kids. I mean, oh man, they're wonderful that she did this and he did that and it's all done in the house. But for me, that's a huge part of success for a team is that their effort is being acknowledged.
Yeah, patted on the back.
They're getting a pat on the back. It's not a natural, for me personally, I don't need that. It's not a personal, but I think if you're a leader of people, you need to be proactive to give that affirmation and the support for your team. And when things are good, tell them it's good. When things are not good, have the courage to do the same, but in an appropriate setting, not in front of everybody, you know. So tourism was great. I learned a lot about digital marketing, and then now I've moved out and doing my own sort of during COVID, we stopped marketing the Cook Islands, and we turned our efforts towards helping with the COVID response. So that was a big part of just using our skills to help with the COVID response. So when I was in there, I helped design the do you remember the CookSafe or the CookSafe branding and that, and then all the Ministry of Health, all their comms, the icons and that. Our team did that. We pulled all that together. Social media communications for government agencies, putting together plans and strategies for agencies who wanting to upgrade their comms, CBN Minerals and places like that. So during that season, and then there's just different little things that are happening in my own world. Not negative things, just sort of like, oh man, I turned 40. I think that made me think quite a bit about what I'd want to do next.
It does.
I could see
milestones.
Milestones, yeah. I wanted to grow. I wanted to move up in tourism, but I could see in order to do that, and when I was, you know, the key part of why I was comfortable to leave is that I was able to articulate how I was feeling to the people above me. Say, hey, look, I want more. I want to grow. What will it take for me to sort of move up in the hierarchy here, or at least to get more responsibility? And Carla was great, Noah was great. They're all great. But the mechanics of a government agency to make a move like that, for me to move up and for everyone under me to take a step up, there's a lot more to it than just a private business where you just weigh up the cost benefit. There's in the government agencies, there's high accountability. So there's and it runs through. Even if Carla was happy to do something or Halatoa, they're accountable. They have to get through the board. And the way the government employment system works, it's not just, there's certain amount of things that has to happen before.
You're a permanent resident.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah.
So Step one.
Yeah. This is more to do about, this step is, one. This is more yeah. to do about changing the structure and organization.
Yeah. Because you can't unless you're a permanent resident.
Well,
I'm just saying, yeah. Like, not can't, it but does, like,
but more,
it totally yeah. helps because why am I saying that? Because then we know that you're like here forever kind of thing, you know, like I want to invest and then you're going to leave.
Yeah. Well, and look, I think there was it made sense to me that there was there something would happen. But at the time I thought, you know, it's.
So in it's, saying all yeah. of that.
I was open for change.
I was thinking in saying all of that and the timing and, you know, and now we're in 23 and all of that amazing, like, journey. What's happening now, right now?
Right now? Anyway, so finally I took the jump and walked out of tourism and left on a good note. Obviously, you got to do it the right way. And then I basically just set up when I left tourism, people that found out that I was leaving. And the way the island works, I think people just start to call and say, hey, look, can you do this? Are you available to do this? Some of my old clients knocked on the door and said, hey, look, I heard you left. Can you do some work for us? Great. So one thing I always felt strongly is to trust God for the opportunities and for the business side of things. So I've always had work come in, which is great. And thank God for that. And now I'm doing just a combination of graphic design work, branding work, and digital marketing strategy.
Ooh. So, which
is great. So that's sort of just helping people to sort of get their strategy sort of organized. For the small businesses, a lot of them, you know, and very much like how you were back in the day, there's two aspects that are challenging. It's cost to bring another person on board to advise. And the other one is the time to implement those said strategies. So for a lot of small businesses on the island, I'm happy to catch up for a coffee and just tell me what you're doing. Oh, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. And just do some sort of top level helping. But a lot of my clients now, most of my government agencies and currently with the FSDA. So,
FSDA. I know that acronym. It's something financial.
Yeah, Financial Services Development Authority. So I'm managing their marketing campaigns, managing that.
And do you all have like knowledge of their budgets for marketing? Could you like just let me know about some of those budgets?
Well, I don't know the knowledge for their budgeting. But I know that I'm there as an employee.
Do we have an arm for some more marketing? I just got my friend Chantel, who's also digital marketing, in the podcast world.
Yeah, well, they I think CSP was doing some work with you, eh? Is that right?
A few. But also like you, like, where am I going now? What am I doing now? You know, not reaffirming, just, okay, you know, where's it going now? This is not really exciting, talking to you, listening to you.
Yeah, that's cool. So I'm doing marketing strategy. I've got a... So on Instagram, I'm on there every couple of days. I'm posting stuff like marketing. A lot of it's just like not so much marketing strategy tips, but just helping people to get comfortable on social media, to see the benefit of social media for a business. So what I've found is a lot of people acknowledge, most businesses here acknowledge, hey, we should be on social media in some form. A lot of them look at how much effort it takes to post continue. So if you ask someone, they say, well, how much should I post on social media? You know, there's no like right, like perfect answer. Because a lot of it for me when I'm talking to small business, well, how much time you have? I always recommend, 3 times a week is good if you can, 3 times a week on your channels or twice a week to get started. But the key idea is to be present on social media, not just sort of, you know, because I think I was talking to a group of female entrepreneurs who are just starting out. Asked the same question. And I said to them, the scenario is if someone meets you at the market, because all these guys are small business, they meet you at the market where they hear about your stuff and they go, you know, people will look on Google. Most of them didn't have a website, you know, because they're just starting out, right? Then so they'll turn to their social media channels. And if they say, Dawn Breaker Fishing. And then they go to your Facebook page and no one's posted there for 3 years. I asked them, is that a positive or a negative perception on your business? So that's where we're at. We post on social media partly just to say, hey, we're present and alive. We're still doing business. And the other part, it's an opportunity to build your reputation online. It's an opportunity to show people your expertise. It's an opportunity to show people what you have to offer, opportunity to show people the transformation and the change they can have or the experience they can have in your business. So I see them as opportunities. The technical side of it, how many and what do? You post reels, TikTok, whatever. Now we can get into those details. But usually in the small business world in the Cook Islands and Rarotonga, the best way to do it is for the business owner to get the ball rolling. And when they have enough, enough money or enough time to sort of sit down with someone like me or someone, you know, employ their, the person who's sitting at their concierge to also do some social media posting along as well as they're hiring the stuff out, then that's good. But I learned all of that during my time at tourism. So I'm doing a little bit of that. Government agencies, as you see on my bio, professional or corporate graphic design. So I've done little jobs like design logo work and stuff, but a lot of my work comes through agencies or government agencies or projects that they're doing where they need to report back and have a professional looking finished product. I just finished doing the branding for the Pacific Island Leaders Forum meeting, which is coming up in November here. So they wanted something that was very Pacifica looking. The Antonina, who's Brown, who's leading the project up there, she wanted sort of like a tapa look. So they came to me to sort of pull that together for them, the branding and the font and the website and all that kind of. I love that kind of stuff, but I didn't have the freehand talent to and the know-how for the motifs. So I ended up shoulder tapping Raniere Ellison, who's a local tattoo artist,
yeah,
to help come together with the concept. So I enjoyed that project, and that's again I think if you get projects here and you don't have a particular skill, the key will be to find someone who you can work with to manage that part. And then I did my bit with the branding and the overall sort of theme and the colors and the fonts they use. So that's a government project job. Yeah. Chantelle's just got up and she's leaving. So it must be boring. Sorry about that. That was
not boring.
Not much boring.
I'm going to get water.
Oh, I get you. I'm fine. Yeah.
Get water. Not boring. See, I'm pouring water now, everyone.
That's just, yeah. So that's what I'm doing now. And it's, I work from home primarily. And it's, I'm at FSDA office, part of my contract there. And the most productive time of my day is normally in the morning up until 2 o'clock, where you either go pick up the kids from school or the kids turn up at home. So it's, they catch the bus home. So I really enjoy, I think like any business, I think you sell your service or your product, but you really enjoy when it helps to change someone's life or, you know, change, makes them better. Well, for what I do, people are proud to sort of show their work, show their reports or whatever. So, you know, I guess that's at the heart of most of us who are running businesses, is that we're making money, but also that we're able to help people reach what they need to reach through our services. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. There's possibility that people are offering, you know, some full-time roles, you know, so we could be talking about this next year and I'll be in a different role, you know. I might be in a, but again, all that's come out of being, you know, finding what you love doing and doing it, and then people sort of will come around and, you know, they recognize what you're able to do for their business or for an organization. There's a couple of organizations. There's an organization who's I'm in talks with about jumping on board. Can't say no. Not disclosure. you know, FBI kind of stuff. But,
thank you so much, Tony. Thank you.
Cool. No, and but look, at the end of the day, I think I've always, you know, I think you look back at your life and you think, man, all the different experiences and things we go through, but watching how God puts those patches, those things together to help you with what you
Faith that he has it. Yeah, that he's got your back.
He's got your back. The story of David and Goliath we share with the Sunday school kids, that's the exciting part for them. It's the, you know, he beats the giant with just a stone and a sling. But if you look further back in the story when David's telling the king that he wants, you know, he'll go out because none of the warriors want to fight Goliath, the king asks him, you know, they give him some question. He says, look, he talked about how he fought the lion and the bear as a young shepherd boy fighting them off. And God's helped him with those, the lion and the bear. And that God will deliver deliver them from this Philistine because of the small victories he's had or his life experience up to that point. So I looked at that story of David and Goliath and thought, yeah, I could look back on my life in my 40s and say, man, all those little, the highs and the lows, the things that we think are at the time of tragedies and such a devastating for our lives. And we look back on how God can flip those situations and be, man, if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't be able to handle what I'm doing today. Mm. And the story of Joseph in the Bible, the brothers he saves Egypt and his brothers come looking for grain.
Yeah.
And the brothers that try to kill him and threw him in the hole in there. But then when he reveals himself, he says to them, what you meant for evil, God has turned for good. So as I look at my life like that, I think, man, all the journey I've been, highs and lows, and I look at what I'm doing today and my family and my wife and our marriage and the businesses and the opportunities I have, you know, I know that many of them I wouldn't be able to carry and handle if it wasn't for the journey I've been on, highs and lows. And I think for all of us, we need to be thankful to God for that. You know, those journeys that, you know, at the end of the day, they're the making of us, you know, they make us who we are. And, you know, hopefully it helps teach us for good. Sometimes you can wallow on these things and they're not so good for you, but you got to learn to be able to take, find the, find the lesson in the failure. You know?
Find the lesson in the failure.
Learn the lesson in the
Learn the lesson.
Yeah.
In the failure.
Yeah. There's always a lesson. Love it. Cool.
I think I'm gonna title your show that, Tony.
Not failing. Thank you. Thank you for that. this failure guy.
No.
Tony
failed. Learn the lesson in the failure. Yeah. Learn the lesson in the failure. All right.
Anyway, your computer's running out of memory. We've been almost a couple of hours.
Thank you so much. All right. Okay. There you go, everybody. Tony Fetow. My goodness, I'm stretching. I'm stretching.
Yeah, your breathing exercise is it's got sore ears, too much talk.
Thank you. Noko ni ia mātou aroa I atu ki a koto katoa. Thank you so much, Tony. We'll have you back again next year, right?
Yeah, man.
All right. And we'll have an update. Look after yourselves, everybody. Kia ora on the podcast. Thank you very much. Take care. Aire rā.